my friends, welcome to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, this here electronic engineering podcast brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Love is in the air. In honor of Valentine's Day this weekend, we're talking about love. Well, stuff I love. And I'm going to have to narrow that down a little bit, because we do not need to be here for an hour. How about my love of Kickstarter? Since the beginning of Fish Fry, way back in 2010, I have reported on various tech-related Kickstarter campaigns. And now I get the absolute pleasure of interviewing Sydney Ann Mai, award-winning product designer at Kickstarter. Sydney and I chat about her passion for purposeful interactions, how her experience in the world of dance has set her up for success in high tech, and all the cool stuff she gets to do at Kickstarter. All right, let's go. Hi, Sydney. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so first off, here at Fish Fry, we love Kickstarter, and you are a product designer at Kickstarter. So tell me a little bit about your position and the cool stuff you get to do.
Yeah, of course. First of all, thanks for supporting us. So I am a product designer on the Creator Tools team. And most recently, we ship add-ons, which is a feature that allows creators to set up and manage optional add-on rewards and backers to, like you, to add them on top of their main pledge during checkout. So this is probably one of the biggest changes that Kickstarter has made in the past 5 years. And it was a very high demand functionality. And it was launched to a limited audience in September this year. And it will be launched to a wider audience this coming January. So I'm very excited to see it out to the world. And I think one of the most challenging but also exciting things about designing for Kickstarter is that it is not your average marketplace, meaning that it's not e-commerce. You're, as a backer, yourself might have experience with this. So it is a all or nothing crowdfunding platform. And with that comes a certain amount of risk. You know, you might find a very cool new tech product and you might love it and back it and spend a good amount of money on it, and it might fail or it might get delayed during manufacturing. So I think when we're designing the product, there is this inherent risk consideration that is baked into our design thinking process, which makes it a lot more interesting. And I think creativity is born under these constraints. I like to solve a challenging puzzle. And this one is very unique to us because of who we are as a platform.
I think so too. Now, Sydney, I saw that you have a passion for purposeful interactions and optimized human workflows. And you also recently received 2 Indigo Design Awards and a .com award for user experience design. So tell me about that. What kind of products did you design to be given these awards?
Yeah, I can definitely talk more about that. So before Kickstarter, I worked at a startup called Selfmade, based in New York. And while there, I work on a R&D marketplace platform that allows small e-commerce entrepreneurs to find, connect, and collaborate with one another. And collaborations such as joint social media giveaways and post for post allows brands to acquire followers from their partners and quickly grow their follower base. And I think this is especially very important for smaller brands who most of the time don't have the kind of budget to run expensive ad campaigns like bigger brands. And this is a product for them. And so, yeah, this small but mighty product went on and won several awards, including the 2 Indigo Design Awards in user experience design and a .com award for small business design, which I am very glad to be a part of. Yeah, so that's the story behind those awards and the product.
Cool. Now, Sydney, you also have a dance background and you studied at the Greer Dance Company. I am interested in how you've seen this kind of discipline overlapping into your career today.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely a lot of overlap between what I do today, which is design and dancing. So I started dancing when I was 15 years old, which is quite late for a lot of dancers, but I fell in love with it. I think most people think that performing arts are creative endeavors, and they're not wrong, but I think they're neglecting whole other aspect of it, which is the discipline and the training and the technicality that goes into it. I think all dancers start training classical techniques. Myself, I started training with jazz and ballet techniques, and then I went on to do a variety of hip-hop styles throughout the majority of my dancing career. But because of my, you know, former training in the classics, it allows me to branch out to do in related dancing fields. And I think this is very similar to design, for all that matters, all creative fields. I think people who aren't in our fields think that we walk in with a blank canvas and start sketching and splashing colors on it. We actually don't. I think creativity is not a blue sky. It is working within the constraints of a box and figuring out a solution from inside the box. And I think in the field of product design, this is particularly true because what we create are systems of functionalities, systems of usable things. And we are able to do this with techniques of design thinking, of root cause analysis, of modular design, and we reuse and adapt old techniques as opposed to like constantly reinventing new ones. If you ever watch videos of Beyoncé performing, you'll see that she's very strategic about where to take a break, where to halt movements, where to pick them up. And I think this is very indicative of a great creative who's just as much of a strategist as a creative.
I think you're right. I never thought about Beyoncé like that, but it's definitely true. Oh, so Sydney, in my role at EE Journal, I enjoy challenging traditional notions of what it is to be a woman in high-tech publishing. How do you feel about the conventional notions of femininity and your role in high-tech?
So to start off, I think that there's a common myth that girls can't and should not do heavy lifting. And this myth manifests itself in a variety of ways. For example, girls aren't normally taught build. We aren't taught to pick up tools, to fix household appliances, or put furniture together. That's the job of our brothers and our dads. And if you just look at traditional gender normative toys, we were given Barbies when our brothers were given Legos. And I think this myth also has a very lasting impact because it manifests itself in the interests that we were exposed to and the career paths we were guided towards, where we're STEM, so science, technology, engineering, math, and other science fields were considered heavy lifting. And social sciences were considered more graceful and feminine. And as a matter of fact, when I started taking computer science classes at school, I was oftentimes one of the very few girls in class. And I think for the majority of my adolescence and my adult life, I spend most of my life dispelling this myth. I think the ability to build something, to create something from scratch, to me is very sexy and very feminine. And to build a great product requires a great deal of caring, of empathizing, and of planning. And if you're a woman who builds things for a living, whether it is code, products, or houses, I think it's just as sexy as any other gender normative professions.
I think you're right. Very much so. All right, Sydney, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. I'm throwing the COVID special your way. So if you could have one meal right now, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, you need a passport to get there, what would you have?
I think the first thing that came to my mind are these Vietnamese rice rolls. They're like crepes, but they're made from rice flours. And I'm Vietnamese and I haven't had it in a long time. And because of COVID, I can really go home. So I would very much want to have it on a plate in front of my computer right now.
I love it. Awesome. Well, Sydney, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I don't know how this seemingly never-ending pandemic has affected you, but lately, I'm really missing people. Just the other day, I chatted with two different friends who work in two different areas of high tech, and they both said almost the same thing. That they would do just about anything for a business trip. I wholeheartedly agree. But for me, it's not just my friends and business associates that I miss. I miss strangers, too. I mean, not all strangers, don't get me wrong, but I do miss those single-serving friends in the Southwest boarding line, the hotel desk clerks, the Lyft drivers who help me navigate cities I've never been to before. So maybe it's that loss of a connection feeling that really made this week's Kickstarter Corner campaign stand out. Let me introduce you to Lucon, a connected lamp kit for connecting people. So as part of Kickstarter's popular Make 100 project, this Wi-Fi connected lamp kit connects 100 anonymous people through light and touch. So this unique lamp was actually inspired by holding hands and was designed to replicate that type of shape and to emulate pressure points we use when we hold hands. So how does this lamp that kind of looks like a big old school wired mouse connect strangers? Well, this kit, once assembled, not only responds to your touch, turns on with a simple tap, but also communicates with other lamps in the Lucon network. When you hold the Lucon for just a few seconds, it will glow slowly and encourage you to breathe deeply. At that point, other connected Lucon lamps will flash. And when other Lucon owners respond by holding their lamp, all of the Lucon lamps will glow brighter together. So there are actually four different modes for this Lucon as well. They include fast flash, breathing, togetherness, and decorative. So what's all included in the kit? Well, it includes a 3D printed mechanical housing, which measures about 6.5 inches by 3 inches by 2 inches or so. It has two different microcontrollers, a Node MCU for the corded version, and an Adafruit Huzza ESP8266 for the battery-powered version. It also has a NeoPixel strip, touch sensor, jumpers, and connector wires, a button/switch, and a 500 milliamp hour battery for the battery-powered Lucon. It also includes, most importantly, access to the Lucon device network for 1 year, beta software, and the setup guide and user manual. So if you're not quite happy with the standard no soldering required Lucon, this team also plans on making the Lucon source code available on GitHub. And they say, and I'm quoting, "We also welcome contributors to improve the software for the entire community." Great. All right, fine, print time. If you already have a 3D printer, which I know a lot of you do, you can download their digital kit for only $10. It includes the STL file for the lamp and a list of electronics and software needed, as well as that 1 year access to the Lucon device network. Now, if you don't want to print the lamp yourself, a pledge of $75 will get you a corded lamp kit, and a pledge of $105 will get you the battery-powered lamp kit. The estimated delivery is May 2021, and since this is part of the Make 100 program, there are a limited number of pledges still available. So, if you want even more information about this perfectly enlightened Lucon lamp kit, including what the community engagement looks like, how they deal with the privacy aspect of this new connected lamp, and the timeline for campaign support, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow me or us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, or heck, you just want to chat, I promise I will respond. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of February 12th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.